Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, and we are presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee. So Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network, puts out a new mock draft. You know how these guys are. They put one out like every 3 weeks for the next, Ian, how many weeks are we until the draft?
2 months.
Over 2 months,
so probably around 8 to 9 weeks.
Okay, so let's just say that they put one out every 3 weeks, and he's looking at 3 more mock drafts, and I believe that would put him at 5. And that sounds to be about right as how many the Mel Kipers and the Jeremiahs and the Johnny Joes and everybody else puts out there. So Daniel Jeremiah is the lead draft analyst at NFL Network. And in his latest mock draft, he has the Titans taking, Ian, can I get my little draft sound? In the latest Daniel Jeremiah NFL Network mock draft, Daniel Jeremiah has the Tennessee Titans with the number one overall pick selecting Abdul Carter, the pass rusher out of Penn State. And I love it because, again, it's not forcing a quarterback who might not even have a first-round grade. But then they post a video at NFL.com, Daniel Jeremiah explaining his latest mock draft. And granted, this could be lying season. People could be faking things, not telling the truth, whatever. But this was Daniel Jeremiah's explanation for why he has the Titans taking Abdul Carter, even though they do not have a quarterback. This is why he has them taking Abdul Carter number one instead of the quarterbacks, Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders. Here's what he said.
Tennessee Titans first pick. I was talking to some folks around the league and trying to canvas just like your opinions, guys who know people in the decision-making process there and not with direct information, but the same theme kept coming up over and over and over again, which was this is new. You know, a lot of times we hear new regime accompanied with a new quarterback, but this was the feedback. I was like, look, we're not completely sold slam dunk quarterbacks here in this draft, which has been pretty universal across the board. Right. They're going to have time. They're going to get time to eventually get their quarterback. And with a plethora of needs, like, do you really want to look back and say your first pick you had to replace a year later or 2 years later? Like, let's just park one in the fairway here. Let's just get the best player available, and then they can, you know, hunt for a quarterback in the next couple years. But they're where they are in their process, that was the feedback. So, boom, I pump in Abdul Carter.
Okay. He just said, hey, you know, just the sense I get is that this is a new regime, which, by the way, is hilarious. Chad Brinker's not new, but, you know, don't let facts get in the way of the truth. And so, again, like, it's not really, I mean, Mike Borgonzi's new, but Brinker is not new, and Callahan is not new, but whatever, I digress. It's a new regime. They want to take their time. They don't want to take a huge risk here when they may have to replace this guy in 2 years. So let's just hit the ball on the fairway. Again, the Lions taking Aiden Hutchinson. Lord, please let this be true. Please let this be true that the Tennessee Titans are saying, no, look, guys, we're not interested in these quarterbacks. We're not going to reach to take a guy who, again, Trevor Sikkema compares Shedeur Sanders to Teddy Bridgewater. No disrespect to Teddy. I love Teddy. But you can go get a Teddy Bridgewater if you want to go get a Teddy Bridgewater. You know, I I hear that and I love it. His second pick in the draft is Cam Ward at number 2. Because his logic, and I don't think I need to play the audio, I think you can take my word for it. His logic is the Browns have to get a cheap quarterback. They're paying Deshaun $46 million. He said that he originally thought, oh, they'll go Travis Hunter because with Kevin Stefanski, he'll want to sign Kirk Cousins. But the Browns apparently aren't interested in paying $46 to Deshaun and then $40 or whatever to Kirk or $30 or $20 or whatever. They want a young quarterback. And so he has Cam Ward at 2 going to the Browns. And see, this is what I love. There are two choices when it comes to running a football team in the NFL. The old man told me this, and I love repeating this because I think sometimes maybe we get a little too carried away about, oh, no, it could be this or it could be. The old man said, you've got two choices in the NFL. You can either do your job or you can protect your job. When I look at the Browns, now I don't know if this is so much about protecting the job as much as this is cleaning up the owner's mistakes, but the Browns almost have to go quarterback. Because what are they going to do? Run Dorian Thompson-Robinson out there next year? They tried that for one game, realized it was a terrible decision, and immediately pivoted. They got to go quarterback. Again, I mean, look, the Browns are one of those teams that they run their operation with a different salary cap than everybody else because the cap is fake, and they take advantage of it the same way the Eagles do. They're just not smart enough to be able to stay away from Deshaun Watson. But they've got to go young at quarterback. And then with the Giants, I almost feel like now he's got the Giants taking Travis Hunter with the third overall pick, and he's talking about, well, if they're able to acquire Stafford and then they can draft Hunter. And again, the Stafford trade, I'm just going to say this about a Stafford trade, and maybe there seems to be a lot of smoke, but I'll believe it when I see it. I'll believe a Stafford trade with the Rams when I see the Rams move off of Matthew Stafford. They were too close to the Eagles this year with too many good young players like Puka Nacua and Braden Fisk and Jared Verse, and they've got a good offensive line. Like, it's, I just don't see it. But the Giants have to sell their fans on hope. And they can't sell their fans on hope with Sam Darnold because he's already been in New York. And they can't sell their fans on hope with a quarterback who's busted somewhere else, like Mac Jones. They held on to their jobs, Brian Daboll and Joe Shane, they held on to their jobs by the skin of their teeth. So if they can't get Matthew Stafford, and again, I'll believe Stafford is gone when I see it, then they have to go quarterback to almost justify their existence. Titans don't have to do that. And that's what I love. Again, this idea that Tennessee is kind of telling people, hey, we're not going to go quarterback this year. We're not going to force the issue. And if there's anything when it comes to Borgonzi and the Chiefs, it's how much he's talked about at the beginning of his tenure in Kansas City, how much he just freaking loves the Chiefs and how much the way they build it. You know, I remember when I first got here and we took a station in Louisville that was, you know, in existence but needed a real kick in the rear end, and we did that. I mean, we did it with the work. Like Jason Anderson and those boys, like when we bring him on the show, and like we put in the work, and I remember it like it was yesterday. He's the same way when it comes to what they did with the Chiefs. But what they did with the Chiefs was they didn't reach for a quarterback. And I just love the idea of the Titans being able to look at the free agent market and saying, you know what? And let's say we can't get Sam Darnold. If we got to bridge a gap with Aaron Rodgers and call it a day, we'll bridge a gap with Aaron Rodgers. We got to bridge a gap with Daniel Jones, we'll bridge a gap with Daniel Jones, we'll call it a day. You know, all these different things like you can do if you're not afraid that you're going to get fired tomorrow, and you can take the best player on a team that desperately needs good players. You have one good player, Simmons, who thinks that he can go on podcasts and tell everybody who they should draft. Which, by the way, I am dying because I just, Titan fans, just sensitive freaking Titan fans on social media on Friday when I said, like, Jeffrey Simmons needs to shut up. Like, he doesn't need to be doing podcasts saying who the Titans should draft. And to me, that's a sign of the culture that Rand Carthon and Brian Callahan put in there, which is, you can do whatever you want, Jeffrey. You want to throw punches at practice? You go ahead. You want to cuss out Buck? You go ahead. You want to tell us who to draft? You go ahead. Meanwhile, in Boston, I guess there's an issue with the Red Sox. The Red Sox signed a third baseman to like a $40 million a year contract, but they already have a third baseman who's making $40 million a year. But the third baseman they have apparently has stone hands, and the guy they signed is a Gold Glover. And there's kind of this debate, like, should the guy that's already at third move off of third? And the first baseman came out and said, oh, no, they shouldn't do this. They should do that. They should this. They should that. And apparently, I listened to Boston. They were just crushing this guy. Be like, you're not the GM. You're not the scout. You need to shut up. And yet here, if I say something like that, it's like, how dare you? How dare you say that about Jeff Simmons? That was a digression. But that's the only good player you have. That's the only good player you have. The only one. So you need a good player. You can draft a good player. Everybody says Abdul Carter's a good player. So go do it. And you can do it. You don't have to take a quarterback, even though there are people out there that think, oh, no, you've got to. You've got to take a quarterback. 615-737-1025 on our program. That's 615-737-1025. I did tease a conspiracy theory that I had. I'm going to share that next. Stillman and Company, 1025 The Game.
Billy Callahan, another guy I've known for a long, long time, and a tremendous line coach. But I also think Billy has done a very – if you check his history, he's done a nice job with mid-round picks, late-round picks. He does like developing linemen. I think that's an extra bonus for you and the front office.
Absolutely. You know, my brother started out in Dallas with Coach Callahan, so, you know, I know his reputation throughout the league. And, you know, it was similar to Andy Heck when we got him there. You know, we were taking these guys and develop them, and then – you take a guy like Andrew Wiley, you know, we got on the practice squad and ended up developing and starting the Super Bowl for us. So, you know, that's what you have to have. You have to have these coaches that believe in developing these players. That's an important part of the process. And, yeah, so we're very fortunate to have Coach Callahan on staff.
I did not know Mike Borgonzi had a brother. That was from Moving the Chains on SiriusXM NFL Radio. Is that like Donnie Wahlberg and Mark Wahlberg, you know, kind of got a little, you know, Boston thing going on there? So I have a conspiracy theory about Billy Callahan, as Pat Kerwin referred to him. By the way, did I tell you I had a good long chat with Pat at the Super Bowl?
No, I don't think you mentioned that.
So Pat Kerwin, he doesn't do a lot of interviews. So we tried to get Pat on the show, but Pat doesn't do a lot of interviews. We had Jim Miller on the show, and we had Gannon on the show. Well, I sat down with Pat for a while. Like, they have like this backstage thing that they sponsor at SiriusXM, and they got the best snacks back there. And I was back there on the couch talking to Pat Kerwin, and I was telling him about how I came up with Floyd and everything else. And, you know, like, he goes way back with Pete Carroll. And so we were talking about Bud Grant and, you know, the stories that he had with Pete, whatever. And so it was a good chat. All right. My conspiracy theory. So the YouTube algorithm that I have suggested that I watch a Barstool Sports video in which Dave Portnoy says he gets to the bottom of why Matt Patricia was the offensive coordinator for the New England Patriots. Now, I know nobody here cares about that, and I'm not even sure that I care that much about that. But I, you know, I clicked it because I was fascinated, and there was something John Gruden said in this cut. John Gruden now works for Barstool. There was something John Gruden said in this cut that kind of opened my eyes, and I said, oh, my God, this is why they kept Brian Callahan. And this is why, outside of Bones Fossil, they won't pay to get Brian Callahan any good assistance. This is why. Here's what John Gruden said, which I think is kind of like something that football people know, but maybe we on the outside are kind of more caught up in who we see on TV. Here's what Gruden said on the Barstool podcast.
I don't care who calls the plays. You can bring Bill Walsh back. Joe Gibbs could walk in here.
Yeah.
The offensive line coach is the most important hire you're going to make as a head coach.
Yep.
And when Scarnecchia left the Patriots, the way the offensive line has developed and the versatility, you can't even imagine what Dante Scarnecchia. He quit one time. And the Patriots.
We brought him back. He sucked him back in.
They brought him back, and they just went right back to the Super Bowl. And I guarantee you, if you had Edelman, if you had Brady, if you had any of them in here, like Garrett Brunt, they will tell you that Dante Scarnecchia was the winning edge for us.
Okay. Gruden's like, screw all the play callers. It's the line coach. And I wonder if, when deciding whether or not to keep Brian Callahan or get rid of Brian Callahan, and I've said what I heard was Chad Brinker didn't want to keep Brian Callahan. I wonder if the Titans said, if we lose Brian, we lose Bill. And we can't go find anybody as good as Bill to coach the line. So you know what? Let's just let Bill keep coaching them. And so we'll have another year with Brian. Who knows if he can coach? Who knows if he can hold guys accountable? I think Brian Callahan might be too nice of a guy to be a good head coach. I think that there's a reason why they didn't make major staff changes, OC, DC, because, again, I'm not sure Amy wants to pay Denard Wilson to not work, then go pay another defensive coordinator to be DC, and then have to pay him and Brian Callahan and Denard Wilson and a new DC next year when they fire Brian Callahan. But maybe they said, hey, we have got to keep Bill here, and we've got to keep letting Bill develop these offensive linemen so we can finally get off this circus of Jason Hodling and Keith Carter and drafting guys like Dylan Radins and not getting anything from them until year four. Again, that Gruden, that I don't give a rat's ass who calls plays, because a lot of you all have been out of shape about Callahan saying, I don't want him to call the plays. And I'm like, calling the plays is the least of my concern. My concern is that Brian Callahan as the coach can't hold anybody accountable. That's my concern. Not about who's calling the plays. But maybe it was, hey, if we lose Brian, we lose Bill. And even though I was disappointed this year by the offensive line's performance, I do think there is something to Bill Callahan as the offensive line coach. And I bet if I sat down with Gruden and I was like, hey, and remember, Gruden beat Bill Callahan in the Super Bowl. And I said, hey, Bill Callahan really that good of a line coach? I bet you Gruden would say yes. For what Gruden's talking about, being like, you guys, you can give me Bill Walsh. I don't care who's called the plays if you don't have a good offensive line coach, man. So that's my little conspiracy theory, that Brian Callahan kept the job because of Bill Callahan. Let's go back to your phones. Matt is up next. Our phone line is driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Matt, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, Jared. Thanks for taking the call. Just wanted to touch base with you on Abdul Carter. No, Trevor's a fan. You trust Trevor. I've watched some Abdul Carter since he's kind of been rumored to be in the running for the number one pick. And, you know, I'm not really feeling it. You know, the guy's kind of a one-trick pony. And he was dominated pretty good by Oregon's both left and right tackle. Actually watched Notre Dame and Ohio State games today against Penn State and was even more underwhelmed by Abdul Carter. So
you didn't think Abdul Carter took over that Notre Dame game?
I did not. He doesn't give you anything in run support. They don't put him in coverage ever. He beat their right tackle two or three times the entire game. So didn't really see it, but would encourage you to watch.
So I remember watching the Notre Dame game, and I want to get to the Oregon game because there is something to be said. Thank you for your call. There is something to be said for what Oregon was able to do to Abdul Carter. But I watched the Notre Dame game like in lifetime, like everybody else. And I'm like, holy crap, this guy's good. So again, I don't want to have the film snap by snap in front of me, but Abdul Carter was good in that Notre Dame game. Now, the Oregon game you bring up, very good point. Oregon absolutely neutralized Abdul Carter. Without naming names, Ian, I'd like to think that I have a pretty good sense of how Oregon was able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that does worry me is Oregon did run right at Abdul Carter. Like, they used the running game to neutralize Abdul Carter. And that's something that he's going to have to get coached up on in the pros. Now, Oregon has a first-round left tackle and probably a third- or fourth-round right tackle. So those are legitimate NFL players. And they did scheme against Abdul Carter. You know, like, that was not just a total luck thing. Like, they did scheme against Abdul Carter. But they did run the ball right at him. And that was part of the game plan, was we are going to run the football right at Abdul Carter. And so, you know what I think about when I'm like, okay, run support, he's going to have to get better in. You know what I would do, Ian? If I'm worried about run support and Abdul Carter, you know what I would do?
What's that?
I'd stick that big fat boy right next to him. The one that only stops the run. And I'd say, hey, man, you're going to have to eat up the guard in the center, and it's going to have to be one-on-one.
Tavondre
and
Sweat.
Abdul, you just set the edge. And big boy, you got to eat those guys up, and you got to stuff the run. Mm-hmm. I will help Abdul Carter with Tavondre Sweat.
Yep, you got Sweat or Simmons. Good options there for run support.
Well, I think Sweat's a much better run stopper than Simmons. I think Simmons is like truly a 4-3 DT, and everybody now wants to really run a 3-4. Whereas I think that Sweat is more of a 3-4 nose tackle. So Simmons gets bumped out to D end in a 3-4 when really he's a 4-3 DT. 615-737-1025. Fitz joins us next on the program. Stillman and Company, 102.5 The Game.
You think the team drafting first will make a major leap, and then also maybe the Panthers are a lot better this year. Why?
Well, timeout. Last year at draft time, I was sitting next to your co-host, right there, Jacqueline, and I said that the Washington Commanders will go to the playoffs based off them drafting Jaden Daniels. The clip is out there. The tweets out there. The receipts are out there. Now to your question. I like Tennessee because here's the thing. That roster, to me, is not bad at all. They just need a quarterback. They have two solid receivers, really good tight end, a collection of tailbacks, and defensively, the front seven is really good. And on the back end, they were banged up a lot last year to get a lot of those guys back healthy. So the template has already been put in place. The foundation is set. Any quarterback you add, Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders, makes this team a playoff team. And the Panthers, based off how they finished.
Okay, there you go. That was Emory Hunt at CBS Sports saying, add Cam Ward, add Shedeur Sanders. The Titans are a playoff team. Look, I don't want to discourage the take because I love when people don't have the same take as everybody else. Groupthink says these quarterbacks suck. So if Emory Hunt believes these quarterbacks are that good or Jaden Daniels level good, say it. I appreciate it. So I don't want to discourage the take. I just completely and totally disagree with it. Jason Fitz joins us now on the program. Fitz, how much of that are we going to hear? How much are we going to hear as we approach the draft? The no, Sanders and Ward really are that good. And how much of the these guys stink groupthink are we going to hear as we approach draft day? And where are you on these guys?
Look, I think we're going to hear more and more of these guys are good because what you have at the top of the draft is desperation. And I guess I would ask you, D, this way. We've all got friends in life that you know that, you know, they've been dating somebody for a long time, and finally they come in and they say, hey, you know what? I got engaged. And when everybody says, why? It's like, well, you know, it's time. It was the time. Like, that never works. You never look at that couple 20 years later and say, oh, my God, look at that love story. That just doesn't ever work in my experience. And that's what I feel like a lot of teams are doing right now. They're desperate for the quarterback need, so they're going to turn around and they're going to try and build up these prospects, because if you're Cleveland, if you're the Giants, if you're the Raiders, any of these teams that are quarterback desperate, when there's not an easy solution that you can bank on in front of you, then you've got to talk yourself into it. I think that's what's going to happen. So teams like the Jets are going to try and talk themselves into Shedeur and Cam. So you're going to hear more and more of people turning around and saying, no, these quarterbacks really are good. And if we're being honest, I think that you have a much better chance in this year's draft of drafting Zach Wilson than you do of drafting Jaden Daniels. Much better. So, you know, I just – unfortunately, as a fan of a team that's desperately in need of a quarterback, I keep saying the same thing to Raiders fans everywhere. Like, I know we need one. You ain't going to get one this year. And that's just, to me, it's that simple. Man, I hope I'm wrong, and I hope these quarterbacks all turn out to be wildly successful. But I would not want to bank my employment, my future running a football team on Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders, or Jackson Dart.
So, Fitz, we had Albert Breer on at the Super Bowl, and I like Bert a lot. He said that just from talking to people in the league, the sentiment he gets is this quarterback class is more like the 22 class, the Kenny Pickett class, than it is the last two after it. And to that point, I remember that draft. The Houston Texans sat there with the third overall pick. The Texans had two first-round picks that year, and they took Derek Stingley. And they were not interested in taking a quarterback, even though Davis Mills, their quarterback, stunk, because they knew those guys weren't any good. And yet the mock drafts had Malik Willis in the first round and maybe Matt Corral in the first round. And it was, well, you know, these guys aren't any good, but teams will overreact for quarterbacks. When it comes to Sanders and Ward, why is it that if people view them the same way as they viewed that class, that they're not going to treat them the same way where the first quarterback went off the board with the 20th pick.
Yeah, and I think what's going to happen by the time we get to the draft, and I've been covering the draft since, I mean, the first time I ever sat on a draft live was with you in Nashville, right? Like, so I've been doing this, what, since 17, around then?
Makes me feel old draft, because most people that are like, I've been doing this, and it's usually like when I was like, you know, an infant, and instead you were, yeah. I've been doing this since I've been doing it with you. It's like, yeah.
Dude, I'm just saying, I've been doing this, what, this is going to be my eighth or ninth year covering the draft. I think, and the more I talk to people that are truly plugged in, I think teams are a lot smarter than we give them credit for being. And what we're seeing right now in the mock drafts is what we always see in mock drafts. Like, there is a belief that they will overdraft at the quarterback position. And so all of a sudden, like, and look, I hate this for Titans fans. It's a bad year to have the first overall pick. Like, I believe that Hunter and Abdul Carter are both much better prospects than any of these quarterbacks. If my favorite team was picking first, I would be begging and pleading for my favorite team to just sit there and take Abdul Carter or to take Travis Hunter at the number one spot. I don't think there's going to be a ton of trade value to move up. I don't think teams value the quarterbacks enough to want to mortgage their future the way they have in the past. And, you know, one thing that we heard for the last 2 years, because you referenced the last two quarterback classes, I think this is an important point. We even knew going into last year that part of the reason there would be a run on quarterbacks in the top 15 was because scouts knew that this year was going to be a bit of a step back. Like, you had to be more aggressive last year if you had a shot at a quarterback than you can be this year, because there was a widespread belief a full year ago that, man, you know, I know people that were flat out telling me that teams offered Washington 3 first-round picks to move up for Jaden Daniels. So we don't need to sit here now and pretend like people didn't know Jaden Daniels was going to be really stinking good. Everybody thought that might be the case. So, you know, now you look at it and say, okay, what are teams offering to move up? A little bit, maybe, maybe not much, maybe nothing. I think you're right, man. I think by the time we were actually doing a draft broadcast at the end of April, I would not be surprised at all if, for example, when the Raiders pick at 6, I wouldn't be surprised at all if both quarterbacks are still sitting there. I don't think it makes smart football sense to overdraft Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders, just because you need a quarterback and just because they happen to be the two best this year. I'd rather wait and see what I get next year than take either of these guys in the top 10.
Jason Fitz is with us on the program. Fitz, I was convinced after this year that Minnesota was going to tag Sam Darnold, even if they still want to go to J.J. McCarthy. Then I went to New Orleans, and I left New Orleans convinced that Minnesota was not going to tag Sam Darnold. Now I'm starting to hear that Minnesota is strongly considering tagging Sam Darnold. What happens with Sam Darnold?
I mean, look, I squarely on the record for a month have been saying I think Minnesota can and should franchise Sam Darnold, even though financially that's difficult to do. That's a big ask financially for them where they are in the cap, and we all know that they can work some of that around. But, man, I'm with you. Everybody that's smart keeps telling me I've lost my damn mind. I don't understand how, if you're Minnesota and you just won 14 games with Sam Darnold, and then you look around and you remember what it was like a couple of years ago when the injury bug hit your entire quarterback room, and before you know it, you had guys starting games that people didn't even know were in the league. When you've lived that recently, and we don't know where JJ is in his recovery, we think he's going to be fine, but we haven't seen him. Plus, they wanted JJ to have a little bit of time. Like, if I believe I'm in a Super Bowl window, and you can't tell me if you won 14 games last year that you don't think you're still in a very high-level window. If I believe I'm in a high-level window, why would I take the chance that I have nothing at backup quarterback and J.J. McCarthy is a step back? I think Sam Darnold would be coveted if he hits the open market. I don't believe he's going to hit the open market. I think the Vikings are going to franchise him.
Do you think they're going to franchise him and keep him, or do you think they're going to franchise him and try to trade him?
I think they're franchising and keep him. I think they're going to have him. I think what makes the most sense for Minnesota is to go into this year at the quarterback position with two guys. And you know what? If it turns out that J.J. wins the job, then, man, oh, well, we wasted some money. But if J.J. struggles at all in the preseason, then you can look at it and say, hey, we're going to bring him along slowly, and we're going to let J.J. keep doing his thing while he learns, and we're going to let Darnold be the one that moves this. Charles Robinson at Yahoo on our show last week said he thinks that there's going to be a 4-year deal somewhere for Sam Darnold. The first 2 years will be the guaranteed money, so it's really a 2-year deal that looks like a 4-year deal. And the cost range of that will be between $80 and $100 million. I think there's a handful of teams that would gladly give that up just to try and get the opportunity at a 27-year-old quarterback that may not be epic, but he's a hell of a lot better than either of the options you have at the top of this year's draft.
Let me ask you this question about Sam Darnold, because I would be giving Sam Darnold that contract that Charles is talking about, and I would trade with Minnesota if they franchise tag him in order to give Sam Darnold that contract. When, and I know it's hard to go back in our minds, but let's go back 5 years after the Titans got to the NFC title game, or NFC, AFC title game. You remember how they got there. They got there because Derrick Henry ran the ball for 200 yards against the Patriots, and then he ran it for another 200 yards against the Ravens. Ryan Tannehill made a couple throws here and there. Ryan Tannehill got a 4-year contract that averaged out to about $29.5 million a year. He ended up playing all 4 years. But with Ryan Tannehill, again, we knew the ceiling was kind of limited. We also knew that he looked pretty good with Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown and Arthur Smith, like Sam Darnold looked pretty good with Kevin O'Connell and his receivers and whatnot. Who's better? Tannehill, and I want to say he was probably 30 at that point in time. Tannehill then or Darnold now?
Darnold now. It's not even close. Darnold now, yeah, 100%. And I think I like the way you set that up, by the way, and it makes me want to say one thing particularly with the Titans. Look, I believe that Minnesota has one of the smarter offensive-minded head coaches in the NFL. I believe that, and I think giving Kevin his flowers is an important part of this. But, I mean, realistically, the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings just went back and showed the entire league, hey, here's what you got to do if you got Sam Darnold. Here's how you win a bunch of games with him. Here's the way to get the most out of that quarterback. Do the Titans not have a head coach that they hired specifically in part because of his success working with a high-level quarterback? I mean, that's part of how he got the job, right? So isn't it fair to look at it and say, hey, if Kevin O'Connell turned around and put the map out there for everybody, then if you're a quarterback-needy team and you're looking at Sam Darnold, don't tell me you can't win with Sam Darnold, because we just saw a team win 14 games. Like, I know we're going to make so much about the two games at the end of the year, the two losses where he didn't look great. And that happened. Like, that's real, okay? I'm not sitting there saying that he's on the same level of, you know, Mahomes and Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. But is he at a level where, boy, you could win a lot of football games? Yeah, I honestly believe he is. Like, he just won 14 games in the NFC. So to me, I'm looking at it saying, hey, if I've got a head coach that I've hired in part because I believe that head coach is capable with quarterbacks, shouldn't they be able to make the most of somebody that we've seen actually be successful in this league? Like, I think if the Browns had any financial way to get to Sam Darnold, then I would look at Kevin Stefanski and say, dude, if you're really a coach of the year, you should be able to get the most out of Sam Darnold, right? Like, I'm looking at the Raiders and saying, okay, if we're going to look at Pete Carroll and Chip Kelly and say, wow, this is a tandem that can make the most out of a quarterback. Well, we just saw Sam Darnold be successful. And I would say the same thing about Callahan. Part of the reason you have that job is because the organization trusted that you could come in and make the most of a quarterback. Now, we don't know if a kid being drafted has everything it takes. You don't know. There's so many variables. When you're drafting, the leap from college to the NFL is so different that I will always buy the, hey, we didn't anticipate this, or this didn't translate well. Like, he just didn't have what it takes to be all of those things. I can hear that from a draft prospect. But when you're talking about somebody that's played in the league and had success in the league with another coach, then as long as you think your coach is worthy of the same level of credit that Minnesota's coach is, why can't you get the most out of Sam Darnold?
Boy, I think that is so well said. I've been saying that the whole time, which is, if you don't think, because Derek is like, well, they did it with, Kansas City did it with Alex Smith because of Andy Reid. And I'm like, well, if you don't think that your coach is as good as the other coaches, then fire your coach and go get somebody who you think is a good coach. Fitz, great stuff as always. Appreciate you, bud.
Appreciate you, brother. Have a great week.
Yep, Jason Fitz on our program. Some of you have your prayers potentially answered. We'll get to that coming up next. Stillman & Company, 102.5 The Game. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Be sure to tune in to 102.5, 106.3 The Game tonight for Vandy basketball as the Commodores take on Kentucky with a 6 o'clock tip. The pregame show starts at 5:30. Vandy men's basketball presented by Athletes Unlimited Pro Basketball coming to Nashville's Municipal Auditorium through March 2nd. Starting now, go to auprobasketball.com for more details and to purchase tickets. And by the way, Vandy does need to get a couple of wins here down the stretch in order to ensure that they are in the tournament. But there was some news today. FanDuel Sports Network, a.k.a. formerly Bally Sports, formerly Fox Sports, they are now available on Prime Video. And so for the cost of $19.99 per month, fans can in the FanDuel Sports markets can enjoy, according to them, unparalleled access to their favorite local teams and hundreds of live events. I actually think that that's false. I think it is very parallel to what we're used to getting on cable. So here's the deal. For $19.99 a month, you can get the RSN that carries the Predators, which I believe, in fact, let me go to my email to make sure that I'm right about this one, because I actually have talked to the FanDuel Sports Network about this today. You can get an add-on subscription through Prime Video for $19.99 a month if you select FanDuel Sports Network South. You get the Atlanta Braves and the Nashville Predators. If you subscribe to FanDuel Sports Network Southeast, you get the Atlanta Braves and the Memphis Grizzlies.
So that's $20 in addition to your Prime account?
Correct.
Okay. So that's what, $35 or something?
Yes, but do we add the Prime cost to that? Since, again, I don't think anyone's like, okay, now I'll get Amazon Prime so I can watch the Predator.
It's mostly for both, huh? Yeah.
I think it's for people that already have Prime that are like, great, okay, now I can watch Predators and not have to.
If you want
to
add on, it's about $35 or so a month. Okay, gotcha.
It's $19.95 a month. It's $19.99 a month.
Extra plus the Prime account itself.
Right, but again, we you don't count Prime in that.
I mean, I guess not. I guess it's already kind of baked in.
Right, you already have Prime. I can live with this.
Yeah, I do have Prime, yeah.
I can live with $19.99 a month. Now, I would not pay to watch Predators the rest of the year. I'm sorry. Like, if I was in a boat where I didn't have the Predators and it was $19.99 a month, if this were the beginning of the season, I would gladly be paying $19.99 a month to watch the Predators this year. But the team stinks, so I'm not going to pay for that. Now, I will next year if I'm in that situation, which I'm not. But if I was, I would. I will pay this per month to watch the Braves. I will legitimately pay this per month to watch the Braves. I think it's fair. $19.99 a month. Some of you will say it's ridiculous. Some of you will say, I pirated already. I don't have to worry about it. And good for you. I think it's fair.
I mean, for baseball, that's a lot of games per month, right?
That is a lot of games. And again, what it stops me from having to do is to, like, go to 8 different freaking apps and log in and sign up. And again, Amazon, you log in one time, you're done. I can live with this. Jared versus Joe is next. Stillman and Company, 102.5 The Game.